Excellent.
All right. Hi. I'm so glad to be able to welcome Scott Teggy from the Gaudete Brass Ensemble, the Brass Quintet. Fabulous, fabulous group. I'm so thankful that you're doing this with us, Scott.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. And just to be able to spend some time with you and to share some of my story and some of my thoughts, you know, it's just a really great way to, you know, start the early afternoon here.
Yeah. So. No, this is cool. So the game plan here is going to ask you a few nosy questions about yourself, about the quintet, in with the idea that this will help all of us sort of think through these issues for ourselves.
Wonderful.
And I guess I just want to start with, do you want to tell us how you formed the ensemble? I'm so curious, what was the original inspiration? And I just have to say, I love that the name of the group in Latin means joy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the group started, I guess we were just finishing our 13th season together as a group, and it stemmed when a couple of us were grad students at Roosevelt University, where we're now the ensemble in residence there. And, you know, at least for me as one of the founding members, Paul, our trombonist, is the other remaining founding member of the group. Yeah, we kind of looked through the union paper, and we knew all the tuba players, at least for me, in town, and I thought to myself, man, how am I going to find work for myself once I get out of here? You know, I could, you know, sort of crawl up the ranks of the ladder in the freelancing world, you know, keep my fingers crossed that, you know, at some point I'll win an audition for an orchestra. But chamber music's always been really important to me. Ever since I was 14, I've been playing in a brass quintet. And, you know, we had an opportunity. One of our trumpet players at the time lived in Milwaukee, and he had gotten a call for a concert at a retirement community. They wanted a brass quintet to fill in last minute. And so he took the call and said, yeah, of course I have a brass quintet. And he hung up the phone and he was like, oh my gosh, I need a brass quintet. So we sort of put together his group of friends, you know, from Roosevelt and then some people in Milwaukee. And we went and played this concert. And I think back to it, I think we still have a recording of this concert somewhere. Hopefully it will never see the light of day. But, you know, we did a lot of what normal brass quintets would program, you know, some trumpet voluntaries, some arrangements of some Stephen Foster tunes, things like that we thought was sort of the expectation. And so we played this concert, we sort of enjoyed each other's company, and we decided, well, you know, we'd all like to make some more money. You know, let's see if we can book some more concerts, some more gigs, sort of do what a lot of, I think, young chamber groups do, especially in the brass quintet world, is they sort of do everything. You know, if you look at their website, it's like we play concerts, receptions, bar mitzvahs, funerals, education things, weddings. You know, and so we did that at first. And we actually, our first name as a group was called Brew City Brass, just because we were based, out of Milwaukee. That quickly changed. We got a residency at a cathedral in Milwaukee early on to do sort of a big, larger group of work. And we thought, you know, at this Catholic cathedral to have our ensemble in residence, the Brew City Brass Quintet, maybe not the most appropriate name. So we switched over for a very short time to Cathedral Brass. And then after we sort of really started realizing that this was turning into something that we really enjoyed making music together, and we thought we had something that we wanted to think more long-term about, is when we spent a lot of time thinking about a name. And that's how we came to Gaudete Brass. We quickly sort of morphed into a group that was more committed to doing new music, to doing original works, and now that's all we exclusively do now is commissioned works and sort of works written for the brass quintet. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, at least for a brass group, the expectation is that we're going to play sort of, you know, song and dance music, you know, like some West Side Story and a Duke Ellington and a Piazzolla piece, you know, sort of a hodgepodge program like that, which are really incredible. And, you know, I, you know, love to go see them, but it's not something that our group really wanted to do. Uh-huh. And so we thought, well, how can we think of a name that sort of reflects how passionate and how much fun we have playing new music, And, but still, you know, as some of our bread and butter was, you know, playing at churches and things like that early on, still sort of reflect in that manner. And so that's where we came to Gaudete, which is Latin for rejoice and joy. And the idea that, you know, this music doesn't have to be scary. It's not scary new music. It's just great new music that's written for brass.
Wow. So Seth, wait a minute. I just have to pause here for a second, because the first two lessons I've gotten is, if somebody offers you a gig, even if you don't have the ensemble, just say yes.
Yeah.
And the second, you know, lesson that I heard is that your first name isn't necessarily the one you're going to stick with.
Right. So, right. I think, you know, something I've learned over the years, I'm sure we'll talk about it some more later, is what is so great about chamber music is the idea that you can change course pretty quickly, you know? And so many, as musicians, we're taught, you know, to sort of perfect our craft in the practice room, and then we give this final product. And as a performer, you know, I mean, that we have to do that. We have to sort of think in that way. But if we think about running a small business, all businesses sort of self-correct along the path.
Yeah.
And at some point, you just need to launch and get things going and learn what you don't know on the job, and then make those corrections, adjust course.
Yeah.
To, and it could be a total 180. It could be small little changes along the way. And so a simple, you know, couple of group name changes. Yeah. And then even vision changes. You know, now, you know, we'll play a wedding every so often, but it's usually only for a close friend or, you know, a family member of the quintet that will go and do that. But, you know, we don't do weddings. We don't rarely ever do a gig. You know, we have, as a brass group, you know, Easter and Christmas are money-making adventures. And so we have a residency at two churches that we spend for Easter and Christmas, and they're sort of stable ways for us to have a sort of church home. And then that also, though, allows us to build sort of an audience base as well, because some of these churches, one of them, we've actually been there for 12 years now.
Wow.
And so
a concert series there as well?
Yeah, we do a concert and then we'll play like Easter Vigil or Christmas Eve. But so we've gotten to know people and they've turned into donors for the quintet, you know, and they've brought friends who have become friends of the quintet, all from building that relationship at this, you know, at these two churches. And so, you know, as a group, you know, we're always looking how to build new relations with new audiences. Wherever that be, whether it's, you know, through Roosevelt University as the ensemble in residence, whether it's through the residencies we have at a church, whether it's through touring, whether it's through some education concerts.
Yeah, right. And I think I first met you at Chamber Music America.
Mm-hmm.
You right? And
yeah.
Then later on at a conference in Chicago, we reconnected. So how long have you been coming to CMA?
Oh, I think we've been coming 6 or 7 years ago. We started coming and it was really great. Actually, you know, as being a younger ensemble and new to all of this world, you know, to go and sort of be a part of that environment and that community. And I think for me, what it really showed, for the quintet, I do all the booking. I'm sort of the manager. You know, we all have different tasks that we do on the business side, but it's really showed me what was possible. Like that there's all of these people out there that are booking chamber groups, and that you have to get to know them, and you can't just expect to write that cold email and then them read it and think, oh yeah, of course, we'll book them right away. You know, they need to get to know you over the years and see your sort of your track and your history and your path that you're on, you know? And so I think CMA does such a wonderful job connecting all of us.
Yeah.
You know, keeping the community tight. And so we went for a couple of years in a row, and we actually took the last couple of years off. We had busy Januaries and other things sort of get in the way. And it was really nice this past one that Charles, one of our trumpet players, and I we attended on behalf of the quintet. And it was so great to reconnect with people.
Yeah. So how did you learn to do all of that booking?
Oh, you know, this is where I recently was talking to actually my brother. I'm a pretty open person about things, and I had the opportunity to record a podcast on someone's podcast, sort of, you know, I mean, what we're doing. And he's very much in the business world, and so I shared it with him to listen, and he gave me a really hard time for tuba bashing. because I usually make fun of my instrument quite a bit. So I'm only going to do it once today. Is my joke usually when we do the quintet does entrepreneurship lectures is because this topic always comes up is as a tuba player, I always make the joke, I'm used to rejection. And so I would always, you know, I have no problem not being responded to in emails, not being responded to on phone calls and things like that. But I think how I learned to do it was, you know, you just have to get out there and start building connections and networks and being willing to hit send on that email. Yeah. You know, something that I've gotten better, I'd say even more recently, I've been trying to sort of refocus different aspects of my my career, is trying to, you know, even the thought of writing like 5 or 6 emails a day on behalf of the quintet to various concert series or various networks to start building that relationship and being willing to, what's a professional email? You know, what does that look like? Not like, hey, George, you know, what's up today? You know, there's, I assume, you know, a lot of musicians, they haven't, you know, really ever developed that muscle. But so, you know, I spent a lot of time sort of like honing that and just being willing to get out there and hit send. After that, you know, I think as we start to book tours and things, you know, getting creative of how do you fill in the gaps? You know, if we want to go out for a week in the Southwest, and so maybe we land 2 larger concerts and we have days in between that we have to fill in so we don't have to fly back to Chicago or, you know, sit in a hotel room. You know, that's where the whole networking thing comes into play. It's who do you know in that area that can help you out? And, you know, to always talk with younger students about is when they're in college, especially, is the biggest time where they can grow their network, you know, exponentially, because there's so many people there. And I always tell them, you don't have to like everyone at your school, or everyone doesn't have to like you, but they just have to think like, oh yeah, Scott was a nice guy, I'll respond to his email. And if maybe we have some funding to bring him in on a, like a noontime series we have, or it's a high school band program, and we have some funding to have them come work with our students, you know, that they would think fondly of the recollection of me. And so in college is the best time. And, you know, I was fortunate to go to Eastman, and one of my biggest regrets from school was I didn't have that, this knowledge then, or this desire. And so my network coming out of Eastman was really small. I hid in the basement of the school and practiced tuba all the time. You know, I didn't go meet people, you know, wildly through the school, and I wish I had. So I think that, and then just trying to learn, piece it together. I think be willing to make mistakes too. We all learn from the mistakes that we make.
Yeah. So what has been the biggest challenge for you in this whole thing? Because I'm just, you know, the group's been together for quite a long time. You've had personnel changes. I'm sure you've had ups and downs.
Yeah.
What has been the through line for you, and how did you approach dealing with difficulties?
Yeah, I think the through line for us has always been our vision of expanding and changing what people think the brass quintet is. You know, we're all so passionate about our instruments, our genre. We realize that, you know, as you talk to people about brass quintets, you know, you ask them, oh, what brass groups do you know? And they know Canadian Brass and Empire Brass and Boston Brass. And those are all incredible groups. And they do one thing so well. You know, we want to sort of show that there is another world to our, you know, that we can make, you know, sort of, you can call it art music or serious music, you know, but having that you can sit down and expect to hear a David Sampson quintet, expect to hear something new and different that was intended for these 5 brass instruments. And so I think through the ups and downs, the idea that like we're trying to make change, we're trying to you know, affect the community of fellow brass players on what is the expectation. You know, I'm fortunate to teach at several colleges, and I refuse to coach music that is not written for the brass quintet, you know, so not an arrangement of something, just so they're going to get plenty of that when they leave, when they show up to play gigs and things, they're going to be able to explore that. But I want to show them that there's all this beautiful music out there that they need to be sharing as well with audiences if they decide to go down that path. And so, you know, I think to, you know, sort of encourage that world, you know, as we go. And so we have had ups and downs. I'd say we've been down the last couple years, if I was to speak honestly. We've had 2 years of consecutive member changes as people have made sort of life, you know, decisions and to take a different path. And so that's been really hard for the quintet, you know, just as the music we play is so much a part of us, and making sure that as we sort of found a new member for the group, that it was really someone who was buying into our vision and was willing to join the family.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, oh, here's another great X player, another great French horn player. Cool. We'll continue on now. But who is really passionate about new brass music? Who's willing to do the legwork? You know, we all have business functions. Who is willing on that side to run a small business? You know, and, you know, so many musicians, and early on, myself included, is I wanted to be paid for everything, you know, and that was just I have to play a concert. There needs to be a check, you know, because I mean, and we should all be paid, but you know, there's, when you run your own business, there's investments that have to be made in the business. And so whether that's, you know, one of the best stories we had as a quintet early on, had the opportunity to play at a mall in Milwaukee the Saturday before Christmas. And they were like, you know, we can't pay you, but, you know, we'll give you in the food court, like a little stage, and you can bring promo material. And I was like, okay, this seems like this could be great. We show up at the mall. They don't even turn off the music, but we play 3 hours of Christmas music. And we brought a table with some, you know, press kits and business cards. But from that and the people we met there, it turned into like 6 or 7 concerts and other things and other work. And so, you know, that 3 hours, even though we didn't get paid that day for that, we got paid in other ways in the future. Yeah. And so I think, you know, remembering some of the hard times that were much harder than they were now, yeah, you know, helps us get through some of these. But I think always having that goal in mind of like, why are we doing this? You know, I think that's something that we all should ask ourselves for everything we do, is why? Why is this important to us? And if it's not that important to us, or you don't have a good why, then maybe it's not worth doing right now. You know, it could be worth doing in the future, but currently maybe there's other things that should be taking up your time.
Sure.
So
I'm wondering about how you balance the quintet work with everything else that you've got going on in your life. And I'm assuming that the other members also have other commitments.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that this is tough for scheduling.
Right.
For tours, but also just balancing in your life. So how do you make that work?
Well, I'll say individually first, I'm an avid teacher. I love teaching tuba and music to kids. I have been fortunate to have a sort of a stability here in Chicago, as I teach at 6 universities, or I'm on faculty at 6 colleges, the life of adjunct. So nowhere's full time, but through that I have about 30 college students. And it's actually opened up a lot of doors. I mean, one, just to be able to learn how to vocalize things, you know, I think is really important, you know, so to be able to speak, it's helped me speak to audiences as the quintet does master classes, and, you know, college things, residencies. You know, I think a stronger connection with the student base, because I work with them every day, all year round. And so I've seen the really big benefit in that. I have a lot of high school students. I have like a little army of things. And some people think I'm a little crazy, because I would say I'm a workaholic. But I see everything, I can answer the why to every student I have. Why do I have this college? Why do I have this student? And it's opened up a huge donor base for the quintet, you know, families of students who are really passionate about, you know, myself, and they become to our concerts and they've given us money. It's opened up connections for other concert venues through, oh, well, my church has a concert series. You know, I'll put your information in front of them. I think balancing my schedule, I would say it's not in balance right now. I would think it's completely out of control, but my motor's running still pretty hot, and so I don't need much sleep right now, and so I'm running with it while I can. you know, as I mentioned before, I think there's going to be a shift soon as I've gotten older. You know, it's definitely the days are longer and take more of a toll. You know, this time of year, especially now that the season's sort of ending for the quintet, the colleges are ending, it's kind of that final push for exams and juries. It's I think an exciting time, but it's also like, oh, can it be August? Or really, my season really goes to August. I run a couple camps in June and July, and so it's really like August is the month that it's a little bit nicer. So it's sort of good though, gives me so many opportunities and so many different people to meet. You know, even faculty at colleges who teach at other colleges as well that brought the quintet in for residencies because of that relationship I've built with them. So I think that is personally sort of like kind of how my life works. I think for the quintet, we have carved out sort of a couple nights a week that we have rehearsals. Trying to get through a lot of new music, you know, is really difficult. And especially the last 2 years having member changes, we realized that we have a core sort of repertoire we choose from over the years. So for touring, we'll play like the best of the best pieces we've commissioned that we think are super strong. And then here in Chicago, we, you know, learn new pieces to share different things. And we found that, especially this year, we got caught in a couple situations where we had an education program coming up and we realized that our newest trumpet player had never played anything on that hour program. Yeah. And it was like a week and a half away just because we had other things that we were handling at the time. And it was like, oh my gosh, okay, we can handle this. And so we got through and it was great. But so we have a couple nights that we carve out and they're movable if we need to. You know, if someone, you know, gets called to play with the Chicago Symphony, you know, and they want to do that opportunity, then we'll adjust our rehearsal schedule. But if someone, you know, oh, I need to teach some lessons, or I want to go wash my hair on Tuesday, you know, we're not going to be moving rehearsal for that. So I think, so that's been really difficult though, you know, especially as we've had new people join and getting them to buy into the schedule and adjusting, accommodating their life as they join the family. But, you know, I think we all have that vision in the end of like why we're doing this, you know, that I think everyone is pretty open and willing to accommodate because we realized that early on, if we're all happy people, you know, in our lives and things like that, that will make better music. Yeah. And so we want to make sure that we can do everything we can to support each other as people and as musicians and as colleagues and business owners to cultivate a sort of environment for us to be able to explore and be open and free and willing to try things.
Great. I'm curious in terms of commissioning new works.
Mm-hmm.
How have you gone about finding the composers that you want to, you know, mm-hmm. Work with, and how have you gone about raising the money?
Well, the first one, I think we have two sort of approaches on the first one. One of them, there's usually we talk about this a lot, just as we sort of continuously are commissioning new and new, more and more works. Is everyone brings composers to the table of who they like. And so we listen to their music, we talk about them, we see, you know, we do a quick, like, is this cost feasible, you know, if we were to go down this path before we even open a door? Because the last thing you would want, at least for us, we would want, is to, like, approach a composer knowing that we can't afford them. Yeah. You know, right out of the blue and be like, oh, would you write us a brass quintet? Knowing, because you can have a good sense of what the number is going to be. The commissioning fee, and then having to back out just because it was totally unrealistic. I mean, I'm sure you know, and I definitely know when someone wastes my time for an unnecessary question. You know, it's just like, you know, I'll be nice and cordial and, you know, be like, oh, thank you, no problem, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm like, I have other things I could be doing with this time than having explored this path that's not feasible. So we talk a lot about that. You know, like who we love and who we want to go or, and then the other thing too is some strategic commissioning, you know, what is going to bring light to the quintet, you know, something that, you know, early on, there were a couple of composers that were very prominent in brass quintet sort of community. They had written other works for brass quintet, a gentleman named like John Cheatham and Erica Wazen, Tony Plogue, they're all sort of in the brass world. And so we had commissioned several of them early on with the idea that if we approach some colleges, you know, with a new brass quintet by these people, the faculty would want to hear these pieces And so, and it worked. We had a lot of faculty bring us in because they wanted to hear a new piece by this composer that we had commissioned. So also, you know, is thinking long term, we want to start building a larger sort of recognition of the brass quintet. And so one of our last projects we did, we just released an album on Sadie Records here in Chicago. And this kind of, with member changes, sort of like to spread out this project a little longer than we initially had liked. But we did on John Corigliano's 75th birthday, a couple of groups brought him to Chicago for a birthday party, and we commissioned five of his former students to write him pieces in his honor for his, like a celebration. And so, you know, that sort of, you know, and then John had a long time ago written a couple of double brass quintets that had never been recorded. Oh. And so for us, that was, you know, one, we liked John's music and we liked these composers, his former students, but it was also a sort of a good angle to bring some more national attention because John is such a large name, you know, in the composition field, to be associated with him and to share his music and what he's done as a teacher, you know, sort of. So that's sort of strategic angle. And then also people we love working with, like Stacey Garup is, wrote us this great 25-minute brass quintet. And she's just like the nicest person and so much energy. And so we all, like, it was an easy project to sign on to for that. So in regards to fundraising, we're currently an LLC, so we don't have a nonprofit branch, and that's been in the works for a while, and it keeps getting delayed as people's schedules get busy and things like that. But this summer is sort of, it's the time to launch a separate organization to help. And the goal is actually to support just all brass music, not necessarily just the quintet, but to have a sort of resource to help other brass players be able to think creatively. You know, I grew up here in Chicago, and I couldn't tell you how many times I played the Ride of the Valkyries in the practice room, because that was just the expectation, was that you're going to get an orchestra job, or that's what you should do. And so I would love to help students realize that there's other things, and students and young brass players, that there's other paths that you can take, that maybe you have a little more control over your career and what you want to do artistically. And so this nonprofit is going to be geared sort of as a resource to people to partner with, to be able to explore different projects. So what we've done so far is we've been fortunate to, again, build relationships with people and, you know, use fiscal sponsors like Fractured Atlas for projects that we've needed to, so people can get the write-off. We've been able to partner with different nonprofits to sort of commission the piece on our behalf and bring donors to them. And again, some of these donors are former students, some of them are just friends. You know, I'm a very social person, and so I have no problem talking to anyone. And so I'll be at a concert and I'll just strike up a conversation, you know, with someone, and you never know where that's going to lead. You know, whether it's like, oh, you're a new music lover. Well, oh, here's my, you know, information. Can I get your email? I'll add you to the list. And then you start building that relationship. You know, and so we've, you know, one of the key donors for our album through Sadie was someone I met five or six years ago, who is just a great supporter of the arts. And when Sadie approached them to help sort of fund one of their projects, they chose ours because of the relationship that I had with them. And they happen to live in my neighborhood, and so we go out for drinks and, like, you know, that sort of cultivating that relationship. You know, so many musicians, I think, forget that, you know, if you're playing, you know, the Chicago Symphony, they have a team of people that do that, you know, and that's great. If you're doing small, you know, chamber music and things, usually you're the one that has to go have that dinner, that has to go, you know, go to their kid's soccer game, you know, do those things. And it's really, I think, once it becomes a very sincere relationship, you know, and not just, I'm going to do this because I want money from you, but you build friends, you build a sort of a community of people that you have lunch with, you know, once a month or once every other month, and you keep up to date with what's going on in their lives. And it's, you know, it's really sort of a special bond, you know. And then they happen to have resources, and they are so passionate about your relationship, you know, that they want to help you in any way they possibly can. So that's been really fun to learn how to do. And again, you know, going back to my tuba joke, I'm used to rejection. So when they say no, it's okay. You know, I once had this woman that I have coffee with probably once a month, and I finally, you know, was going to ask her for some support. And like right before, she knew it was coming. And right before I asked her, she's like, Scott, I'm not going to give you money. Not now, at least. And I'm like, okay, fair. That's no problem. Let's continue our discussion about, you know, the weather. And she is an amateur pianist and what she was learning on the piano. And so, and it was great. And I was, so, you know, I, you know, found someone else and, you know, I'm continuing to grow that relationship. You know, the other thing too is looking for, have some really great sort of organizations and businesses that have been really supportive that we've, again, grown that relationship where they've given us some money. You know, like for us as brass players, like the Brass Repairman here in Chicago has funded, you know, quite a few different things for us. And we put his name on it and we put his name in programs and things like that. And so, you know, and different instrument makers and mouthpiece makers and things that are specific to us. And so I think for all of us to think about how can we sort of connect with people and what can we offer them, you know, in return for things. And so like for those, we just gave them sort of like marketing space in our program. It wasn't an actual donation. We didn't have to be a nonprofit to accept that money. We just, it was like, oh, well, we'll market, you know, you and all of our programs for the season, you know, coming up and, you know, put ads and put stuff on social media for them and things like that. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, being willing to be creative. I remember once, this piece we commissioned from gentleman David Sampson, he wanted it to be about four different spots in Chicago, the piece. And so I found four donors. I split the commission fee up four ways, and I found four donors to each pick a spot in Chicago they wanted the movement to be about. And so then they feel invested. You know, because it's like, oh, I picked, you know, Grant Park, you know, and then David wrote this thing about Grant Park. And so, you know, I think the idea, how can you get them involved in the process as well? Right. You know, people, once they feel a part of it, they want that feeling again. You know, they want to be a part of something else that is, and it's going to be longstanding. You know, that piece will forever now be here.
Yeah. With that piece, is there a multimedia component where there's, you know, illustration?
Yeah. We should do that. Actually, we've talked about, like, you know, especially now with, you know, here in Chicago, some of them would be so great to get one of those drones to like fly over Grant Park, you know, and like, you know, have that play like in the background, you know, record that as we're playing the movement, you know. And so I think that's definitely something that we need to look into. That, or even like working with dancers, you know, I think there's so much, you know, how often can we collaborate with other people? You know, it's something the Quintet hasn't done very much yet that, you know, we've talked about doing and just trying to find the right situation, you know, to, because then you bring in other audiences who maybe would be interested in what you're doing, who would maybe not check out a contemporary brass ensemble, you know, unless their dancer friend was there.
Yeah. So. Okay. So I think I just have one last question for you, and then you tell us whatever else you want to add. But I'm really wondering, when you're looking at your whole career, mm-hmm. all these things that you've got going on, what is the most rewarding part of this for you?
You know, I think there's two answers. I definitely divide my career as in half, as a player side and a teacher side. And I think some of the problems I've had recently with managing my time is that I wish I could choose which one was more important to me, because I get pulled really strong and I tend to go after things like with 120% of my effort. And so I refuse to let things go. I think as a performer and in regards to the quintet, is something I want to see is, you know, when I throw in the towel years and years, that I/the quintet's added a substantial amount of repertoire to allow future brass players, that the expectation is when you go to a brass quintet concert that you'll hear these works on a concert and not Porgy and Bess, West Side Story, or even some of the old standards. I mean, you know, string quartets have Shostakovich and Mozart and Brahms and Beethoven and all of that, and that's what you sort of expect. But they have so many more groups commissioning new works that you're going to expect something new on a program. In the brass world, it's so, you know, so small right now of what you expect, that I'd love to look back and give them a gift of all of this music that is incredible that they can choose from, and just to change a little bit of that perception of what is a brass instrument. You know, we fight a battle sometimes as we've commissioned work. So many composers, I think they get excited and they want to write some like fanfare-y sort of type brass pieces, really loud. Yeah. And that's great. And we want to allow them to write what they want to write. You know, it's something that they'll write a better piece if they're passionate about it. However, we would love to explore the different colors that we can create, like how soft we can explore and, you know, the lines we can create. And so I think on a playing side is that. I think on a teacher side, I think I recently had a unique experience. I teach at this many places, but I teach at a community music school here in Chicago. And I recently had a student who had some very, very major struggles dealing with some neighborhood pressures of being a teenager. And through support from this community music school and through just being, you know, really caring about this particular student, we were able to get him sort of off a path that was leading towards, you know, not future successes and back into a path that allows him to succeed.
Yeah.
And get out of his neighborhood and take his experience and show to the younger students that there is opportunity and things are possible. And so as a teacher, I think, you know, just to invest in these young students and to be able to show them that what is possible. So many doors are closed now for kids, and they don't think things are possible, and things are really stressful and in this sort of climate, and especially here in Chicago, you know, if you're on the wrong side of the city, you know, there's a lot of pressures, but to show them that it doesn't have to be that way. And so actually last night they featured this one particular kid at their gala, and they did a video about him, and then he got to play a concerto with their band in front of 400 people. And he's off to college next year. And it's, you know, sort of the idea to look back and think like, you know, I helped this kid sort of, even if he doesn't, you know, continue on in music, that doesn't matter. Yeah. Just that he, you know, we got him onto a path that at least has doors open for him. And so the more I can do that just to open doors for people, I think is something that, you know, I want to look back and think like, oh, I opened those doors for these kids.
Wow. So that's great.
So.
Yeah, that's great. Anything you want to add? I want to make sure everyone knows how to get to your website. And
Our website is gaudetebrass.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the social media. I think check out Sadie Records. It's our record label. It's a group organization based here in Chicago, and they're doing wonderful things promoting Chicago groups and Chicago musicians. And they happen to have had some recent Grammy successes over the last couple of years. And so go support them, check out what they're doing. And of course, support Angela because she's awesome.
Oh, thank you very much, Scott. Yeah, I really appreciate this, and I look forward to the next time we can connect.
Oh, me too. It's always great connecting with you. So inspiring, and everything you do to help us as musicians and to show us paths and ways and open doors for us that it is possible.
Great. So,
thank you.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
You're welcome. Thank you.